Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Two, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. Put your glad rags on. Join me, hon. We'll have some fun.
It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. We got through another week, thank God. Between the tainted tomatoes, between the porno case, between the corrupt judge, between the psychotics on the Supreme Court who said that the terrorists deserve the same benefits and treatment that you get. It's unbelievable to me. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Play rock around the clock for another 30 seconds. I'll take a break. I'll see you Monday. Bye. No joke. I'm wiped out today. Wiped out. I got to be careful. I'm exhausted from this week. You can't get away. Every channel, like they personally knew him, like God died. Do I have to talk about it? Wait and hear whether I bash him or not. I'm not bashing Tim Russert. Turn the music off. I'm not going to bash Tim Russert. I don't know the man, never met the man. He seemed like a nice enough, you know, average guy, which is part of his charm. But I feel obligated to tell you that I'm offended by the coverage of Tim Russert for one primary reason. Not one of the so-called eulogies today mentioned that the man came from the far left of the political spectrum. He was press secretary to Governor Mario Cuomo, a certifiably far leftist. He was then chief of staff to uber-liberal Senator Moynihan, the most liberal senator, more liberal perhaps than Obama. And then he moved on to NBC. That doesn't make him evil, but for God's sakes, don't they have any shame, these people in the media? Can't they say that the man was a lifetime committed ultra-liberal and that he hid himself on NBC as a journalist? Can't they just say the truth once in their life? Now, play rock around the clock. We got through with that. I feel better. That's all. Extra, extra. Read all about it. Judge in, declares mistrial. Judge under scrutiny in the porno case. The judge who likes women painted as cows. The judge who has a fetish for urine and feces. The judge who was sitting on a porno case declared a mistrial in the L.A. obscenity case. Play the music. What am I talking about here? Why waste my time on this rubbish? We found out, by the way, who blew the whistle on the judge. And I said the whistle. And we'll have the guy on at 3:30 today. Actually, in 20 minutes, that's 6:30 your time. That's 9:30 on a repeat time. It's 12:30 in another part of the world. It's 9:30 in the morning in a cave in Pakistan where Osama bin Laden allegedly listens to the Savage Nation. Bing. Boom. That's all. So here we are, Friday. It was a heck of a week. We started out with a monologue on tainted tomatoes. I told you they were coming from Mexico. The media wouldn't report on it because the powers that own the agribusinesses are so overwhelmingly powerful. And they also sit on the boards of ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, and MSNBC that they wouldn't tell you that the tainted tomatoes were coming from Mexico, but I did. Then I gave you a monologue on the difference between a Republican and a conservative. Then I was the first to tell you about the porno case and what it really means. Then I was the first to call for the immediate arrest of the Supreme Court justices Kennedy, Souter, Ginsburg, and I forget the rest of their names, who have said that Islamofascists should have the same benefits that you have as an American citizen, even though these rat bums want to kill you. I said that the president has the power to arrest the Supreme Court justices. But look, I live in a dream world. I admit it. Let's see what else we have of the week. News account of teen staph infection from lip piercing. What would you expect from someone who pierces their lip? They're doing it for health reasons? Your grandmother would have pierced her lip? What are you people, crazy? Look, I got to put up with this every day. You don't. You know, you could be doing something else other than listening to me, and you're not, because you know what it is? Some of you listen to me because of the equivalent of drawing in, like, air over a tooth that has a cavity. You ever do that to yourself when you had a cavity in your tooth? For some reason, you would go, you'd suck air in to feel the pain. I mean, in some ways, listening to talk radio is like that, but you can't help it. You know you have a cavity. You know your country has a cavity. On the air, going in the cavity. Well, how about the guys outside the remember there was a chain called Carvel, the Carvel ice cream stands, the type of, you know, they're around somewhere, dairy freeze or whatever. How about the guys who go there in the summer on a hot day, shorts, big beer gut hanging over a pair of pants, and they walk in for the dairy freeze with a straw that would make a Coke prostitute, you know, salivate the size of that straw. And they take a sip of that icy drink, and you see them leaning on their car fender a minute later. Ooh, the pain in their right eye. They grab the temple. Why is that? Can anyone explain why the ice in the dairy freeze and why I'm talking about this? I'm talking about it because I'm so sick and tired of the imperious nature of the government and the media that I'd rather talk about a guy getting a headache with a Dairy Queen buzz, you know. Here you have a judge sitting on a porno trial who likes the very kind of sick, disgusting filth that the human rat who made it was going to be judged by. And he only got caught, by the way, because a lawyer, who we're going to have on the show very shortly, we found the man's name, a lawyer in Beverly Hills who has had a long-running dispute with the Ninth Circuit Court of Schlemiel's, told the Associated Press that he discovered the sexual content of Judge Kaczynski while monitoring the judge's website in December. And the lawyer, Mr. Sinai, said he downloaded the files, then started contacting reporters to bring attention to what he called widespread ethical problems on the Ninth Circuit. This court needs to be broken up into three parts. They are Bolsheviks, all of them. There are actually two or three conservatives, but the issue is the power they oversee. This court was set up when America was a different nation, when the West was not as populated. It's time to break this court up. Now, who's going to do it? The Republicans? You must be joking. Do you find it offensive that I disclosed, Tim Russert's Democrat connections? Does that bother you? Is that unfair? I mean, I didn't bash the man. Listen to what I said. I said he looks like he was probably a nice guy. I never met him, okay? But he was a biased uber liberal. And nobody in the media said that he started as an ultra-liberal press secretary for Cuomo and Moynihan. And then he went into NBC where he was a mole the rest of his life. To me, that's what this story really is about. Now, you're going to say, oh, I'm being unfair. What do you think? Hold it. Leave lines open. When my time comes to go to heaven, tell me what they'll say about me in the media. The answer is nothing. They'll make believe I didn't exist. I have a show that most of them would love to have. I make more money than most of them. I have a far larger audience than most of them in cable television. But they pretend I don't exist. Now, I'm being arrogant. I understand that. But if I am not arrogant about me, who will be them? Who, the leprechaun? The leprechaun is going to tell you about me that his show is dwarfed by mine? The leprechaun's radio show is like the moon compared to me as the sun. He sits up there like God Almighty, the leprechaun, pretending to be a conservative, wrapping himself in the flag. He's no conservative. Take a listen to his policies and look at what he stood for. He's another one faking it. I am sick of the media faking it. I tell you who I am. I tell you what my biases are. And it doesn't mean you have to like it, but at least you know where I'm coming from. You don't hear that in the eulogies today. So, you know, that's why I did it. Play Rock Around the Clock for a minute. Then I'm going to look at the stories. I did. I prepared. Don't kid yourself.
5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock.
Turn it off. I'm not in the mood for it. It's giving me a headache. Here's some stories. Oh, God, look at these stupid stories. Daily Telegraph, London. Intelligent people less likely to believe in God. Oh, okay, Professor Lynn. You interviewed. Who did you interview? Oh, several Gallup poll studies of the general population have shown those with higher IQs tend not to believe in God. That's a very reliable source, the Gallup poll. You know how right they've been on so many things. I have about 150 IQ. I believe in God. I guess I'm an anomaly. Is that possible? I earned a PhD from a great university. I've written like 27 books, three higher degrees, 150 maybe to 170 IQ, and I know God exists. But I guess Mr. Gallup hadn't interviewed me yet. New York, Frank, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Well, Mike, you left one thing off of Tim Russell's resume, and that's he actually worked for Tip O'Neill as well.
Well, okay, Frank, is this not fair game on the day the man is eulogized by everyone in the media where they're practically crying over the man? I didn't say he was evil. I didn't say he was bad. But for God's sakes, can't we also describe that he was a lifetime uber-liberal?
No, it is what it is. You know, it's not a bad thing. You know, like, that's, you know,
That's right. It's not a bad thing. To me, it's an evil thing, not a bad thing. You know what's evil about it is hiding your political affiliation when you're working for NBC and making believe you're a journalist, when in fact you're a propagandist for the ultra-liberal sensibilities of this country. Thanks for the call. Why do I care? What do I care what anyone thinks about any of this? What do you want to talk about here? You see, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, you don't care about breaking that up. You don't even know what I'm talking about. The communist Bolsheviks sitting up there on their golden thrones. His judge has a nerve to declare a mistrial in a porno case. He's declaring a mistrial. The man should be in a pair of handcuffs for having sat in a case without having disclosed that he himself was a man who liked the very same thing. Women painted as cows? Half-nude men cavorting with aroused farm animals? I don't even want to talk about it anymore, but I will anyway, because I have to. It's my job. I'm obligated. If I don't do it, who's going to do it? Who's going to do it? Brian Williams? Anyone on Fox is going to actually tell you what the judge had on his porno computer? They're not going to do it because they're too polite. I'm not polite. My job is to be not polite. My job is to be impolite. And somewhere between the truth the lie is a huge chasm. And let me tell you something. You cannot easily traverse that chasm. You can't stay on the other side of that chasm in the area called politeness and get to the truth. What you have to do is take a flying leap over that chasm. Every time you try to express the truth, you're jumping and trying to fly over a chasm. And most people don't have the brains or the guts or the wings to do it. And I hope to God I continue to have the wings or the guts to continue trying to make that jump every day. It's not easy. So, of course, people were affected by Russert dying. And I'll tell you why. Emotionally, people who didn't even know what his politics were liked the guy because he looked like the guy next door. He looked like an average Joe, like a nice guy. He probably was a nice guy. But to go overboard now, like, well, we're going to have a state funeral now? He's going to lie in state? With George Bush, anything's possible. Maybe they could have a national day of mourning. Okay, I'll move on. I'm not going to talk about it. One quick call on Tim Russert. And by the way, I God rest his soul. I hope he goes to heaven. Norfolk, Virginia, Mark, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, you're absolutely right about Tim. You can tell by the questions he asked, but you're done with Tim. And you know, you're much smarter than I am. My IQ is only 134.
Well, it's funny when I say 150 to 170. Nobody really knows what the numbers actually are. You know that you're in the upper range or the lower range or the middle range, and if you're in the lower range, you wind up in journalism. If you're in the idiot to moron range, you wind up in public service.
Yeah, I tried to call you about a month and a half ago. You mentioned that you quit toasting your bagels.
Really? Why? Why did I say that? Why would I quit toasting my bagels?
You said you don't have time. You were talking about your tires.
I don't have the patience to watch a bagel toast. I don't. Hey, does anyone know of a bagel that's like that does it instantly? I don't understand it. I don't have one toaster that does. They make you wait now for who has the patience for this?
In your line of work, you see so much filth, and you do so much research, and you get all this negative stuff. You got to have time for the positive things and smell the roses and toast your bagel.
I know, and toast the bagel, right. Yeah, I'm working on it. I'll be right back. I'm going to go toast a bagel.
Savage. Boom, boom, boom.
My body.
this song just got Teddy's attention. He looked up from the chair that he is dozing on here in the radio studio. Welcome to the Savage Nation. It's going to give the time, 26 minutes after the hour. These national shows are murder. I've been doing it for so many years. At least you can give the time on a local station. The weather, the location, the day, the moon. National show, you're not supposed to mention weather, city, where you are, what you're doing, because it's replayed so many different times and different places and time zones. For me, it's Friday afternoon. I'm in San Francisco. It's 26 minutes after 3. I'm looking down at San Francisco Bay. The heat wave has left. As predicted, finally, the weather system changed. Excuse me, what do they call it now? There's a new word for weather. Beowulf, what's the new word for weather? Climate change, I'm sorry. The climate change has changed. I'm sorry. First it was global warming. Then when people caught on to the con, they changed it to climate change. And now that everyone knows climate change is a new set of words for the word weather, where are they going to go now? Anyway, the climate change has finally just changed here in the Bay Area. There's a beautiful mass of what I love, white fog sitting on my bay. I cannot wait for tomorrow to come around because I'm going to go out on my boat for the first time in a month into the fog. Get salt spray all over my face, all over my boat. Come back soaking wet like a Groton seafood head. And I will feel briny and better. That's all I can tell you. Oh, the heat was horrible. I know now I could never live in Florida. I've been toying with it for 5 years now. You know, 3 years in a row I bought a house in Florida and then canceled it. On the beach, ocean. But, you know, it was always something. It was always a reason not to move there. And I have nothing against it. I know it's lovely and all, but I don't like the heat. You know, there are plants that grow up in the tundra that would die if you put them in the heat. And, you know, there are plants in the tropics that can't make it in the... I'm more like a tundra person than I am a beach person. I'm in a fog around the heat. So, anyway, it's a beautiful day. And Huckabee is joining Fox News as a political commentator. Can you believe this? Mike warned you. Beware the government media complex. I told you Huckabee was a con man. Wait, it gets worse. Here's another one. What's this jerk's name? The actor already, I forgot. Oh, Kevin Spacey to teach at Oxford. He's going to teach in international relations, which I hear he's an expert in at 5 in the morning.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. One of the big topics of the week was the big giant porno case going on in California and the disclosure that the judge, the chief judge of the Ninth Circuit Court of Schlemiel's, Kaczynski, it turns out, was enamored of this exact kind of pornography. And for a few days now, we've all been wondering how in the world did this secret information get out there? Well, we learned only 59 minutes ago that it was the result of a lawyer from Beverly Hills, named Mr. Cyrus Sanai, who discovered this. And Mr. Sanai joins us now on the Savage Nation. Welcome to the program.
Hey, I'm pleased to be here.
How did you come to research Judge Kaczynski's website? What kind of motivated you to even look at it?
I've had a pending misconduct charges against Judge Kaczynski for 3 years, involving his misuse of that website to place information relating to a case where I was a plaintiff on his website in relationship to an article he simultaneously published directly attacking me and seeking to influence his colleagues and the public on the resolution of the appeals that were then before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal.
Isn't that rather unusual for a judge at any level to post cases on their own website with their opinions?
It was not cases. It was actually evidence that was, at that point, not before the court. And in other words, Judge Kaczynski was acting more as an advocate, trying to put new evidence to influence public opinion and the court, as opposed to acting as a judge. And the answer
unbelievable.
It's only happened in two other cases within the federal judiciary. The most prominent was when the judge in the Microsoft antitrust case gave comments to New Yorker author Ken Auletta, and the trial court judge was excoriated by the D.C. Court of Appeals for this incredibly obvious violation of judicial ethics. And
all right, so because of that, because of a clear violation of ethics, you started searching the website, and then you stumbled on the pornography that was mixed in with cases and family pictures. Is that what happened?
It's a little more extended than that. I filed an initial judicial complaint back in 2005. Judge Kaczynski issues a half-hearted apology at the end of 2006, but the portion of my complaint dealing with the website is denied on the grounds that there's no such website as alex.kaczynski.com. And I discovered after I received the order that he had taken the website down for a year in order to make it appear that it did not exist. A couple months later, after my challenge to that ruling had failed, the website pops back up, and I file a second misconduct complaint dealing with, again, his placing of the case-related materials back in 2005, and now he had put on the website the article he had supposedly apologized for and was distributing that to the public. But it was not until Christmas Eve of December 2007, after I had placed my kids in their beds, that the Santa Claus gave me a present, which was that I was able to locate when I was just randomly Googling stuff, a Russian MP3 file sharing site that said, "Hey, you want free MP3s of music? Go to this site." And the site was alex.kaczynski.com, but a directory that I otherwise was not aware of. And that is the directory of material of file-sharing MP3s, of explicit, sexually explicit, and in some cases scatological.
Did you actually see all of the imagery, including the women as cows and the man with the animals? Did you actually see that stuff?
I did not merely saw it. I downloaded it, and I caused his website to go down because I exceeded his bandwidth. When I came back up...
Wait a minute. This is you know, this case is far-reaching for me, because to have a pornography case of this magnitude, and you probably as an attorney understand this case is going to be a seminal case, because if this man is found to be an artist, not a pornographer, the country's going to be rolling in more filth than it already is. It's going to be as big as the Larry Flint case. So didn't Kaczynski, in your opinion as an attorney, violate all ethics by not disclosing to the prosecution and the defense that he, in fact, had a sort of proclivity for this type of pornography itself?
I don't know if he had to disclose he had a proclivity for it, but he certainly had to disclose that he was distributing it and making it available on his own internet site.
Distributing it? That's very interesting. The emphasis on the distributing it part is actually a bigger issue, isn't it?
It absolutely is the critical issue, because Judge Kaczynski has a First Amendment right under the existing law to view whatever he wants pretty much in the privacy of his own home. But when he
And I agree with that. If it's legal and it's not hurting anybody, that's his business. But there's another element here. Let me ask you as an attorney. Let's say you took a case of a man who likes to fly model airplanes in Griffith Park, and an ordinance is about to be passed banning the flying of model airplanes, and it goes before a judge who's a model airplane enthusiast. Wouldn't he have to disclose to both prosecution and defense that he likes flying model airplanes in parks?
Absolutely. And then he would have to solicit the comments of the both sides to determine whether or not they consented. But there are some cases that even if the parties consent, that the issues are so important or the conflict so obvious that even if the parties consent, the judge has to recuse himself. And I think most people believe, and I guess Judge Kaczynski has belatedly agreed, that this was a situation where he should not even have stepped into the case. And as you may or may not be aware, he has just issued a order recusing himself from that.
Right, but he also declared a mistrial. That just came out as well. Now, what does it mean he declared a mistrial? Where is it going to go now?
Well, this particular trial is a mistrial, means that there is some fault in the trial that requires a do-over. It's not an acquittal. So the order specifically provides, as it should, that a new judge will be appointed to take over the trial.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about the judge himself, Kaczynski? It seems to me he's a loose cannon who does what he wants. Is he a guy who thinks that he's above the law? Is that your opinion, Mr. Sanai?
original article I wrote in 2005 essentially said that a large portion of the Ninth Circuit acts that way above the law in terms of its adjudication of the bulk of its cases. But I think that is absolutely correct characterization. The problem here is that not so much with the obscenity side, but rather with the copyright violations that Judge Kaczynski has been saying one thing in his legal opinions, but doing another thing in his private life. Because Judge Kaczynski is a hardliner on copyright infringement. In fact, he adjudicated a case involving file sharing of pornography called Perfect 10 versus Visa.
Wait, you mean he's an absolutist who says you can't lift someone's copyright, he sticks to the letter of the law, is that what you're saying?
More than that, he took the position that if there is a website that has that Visa or MasterCard is processing the payments in order to join, and there is pirated material on that website, such then Visa and MasterCard should be held liable for copyright, for what's called contributory copyright infringement, even if they have no idea that the material is pirated.
All right, so he's a judge who would find in my favor in my case against CAIR. I don't know if you know that case. It's a big case before Judge Ilston right now, which is that CAIR took my radio material, about 4 or 5 or 6 minutes of it, used it against me out of context, and then used it on their own website. My attorney, Dan Horowitz, says, well, they're entitled to their opinion, but they violated my copyrights, my copyright, by using my material without permission. So in this case, Judge Kaczynski would probably agree with my attorney.
Well, he would, not only that, Kaczynski would say that if the that particular website involved a subscription so that someone had to pay to access the material that from your program that had been put up, then in that case, Visa or MasterCard should also be held liable. That was That was the exact point at issue in that case, was the scope of the people who assist the copyright violator who can potentially be held liable. And he took a very, very, very hardline position. So it is not the case to say that on the copyright infringement that there's any lack of hypocrisy. On this particular issue, he knew what he was doing was wrong, and he did it anyway. And I'd like to point out one other thing.
Wait, hold it. Before you go on, because this show, we don't want to lose the audience. We're talking about the judge in the porno case that we talked about on Wednesday and Thursday. I want the people to remember what we're talking about. And we are speaking with an attorney from Beverly Hills named Cyrus Sanai, who is the attorney who discovered the sexual content, because we could not understand how this came to light. Now, you didn't go after the sexual content per se. You just happened to stumble upon it.
That's correct. I was actually expecting, when I was looking to determine what he was using the site for, that it was some other purpose in trying to influence the adjudication of cases on the Ninth Circuit, because that's what had happened in my case. My case had involved him posting pornographic images of some of me, not that there are any that exist or that anybody would want them, but rather he was improperly posting case-related material on his website.
Now, what about the Ninth Circuit in general? There was a lot of talk for a while during more conservative years in this country about breaking the court up, because it's extraordinary reach. The Ninth Circuit was created when America was a much different nation, when the West was not as populous. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. At the time, the West was extremely thinly populated, and the Northeast contained the bulk of the population. So, for example, the First Circuit has only three states, Maine, of which the largest is Massachusetts, and the northernmost is Maine. The Ninth Circuit contains 20% of the population of the United States and adjudicates issues in certain areas, such as copyright infringement, that don't often appear in any other circuit. So in many areas of the law, it sets the law.
Amazing. Well, there was much talk about this, and it's died out. Apparently, the so-called Republicans dropped that ball. They were talking about breaking it into two or three, weren't they?
Yes, they were. And Kaczynski was one of the people who wanted to keep it together. There were some Republicans and Democrats who want to take it apart. It's largely an issue within the courts of a feeling of whether or not the Ninth Circuit is efficient or not. But the problem with the Ninth Circuit in terms of its operation is that a very small number of judges supervise a huge number of cases, and for most of these cases are issued one- or two-page decisions that are called unpublished decisions. The issue I was talking about back in 2005 is that that in my personal experience, many of these unpublished decisions are decided absolutely contrary to binding precedent from the Supreme Court.
Well, it is the most overturned court in the land for a number of reasons. It's that politically extremely liberal in most cases, but that's irrelevant. The last question I'd like to ask you is about the judge himself. Okay, the case is out of his hands. He's declared a mistrial. What is the chance of him being dismissed as Chief Justice because of this incredible disclosure and embarrassment?
I think that depends on how Judge Kaczynski handles the investigation which he has ordered on himself. When Judge Kaczynski was originally confronted by Scott Glover of the LA Times, he completely admitted what he had done. And that is something I would say is admirable. Because if one is caught, one should not lie about it. When I have advised clients who are caught in a scandal, I always advise them, in the case of a scandal, the cover-up is always worse than the original crime. However, Judge Kaczynski appears to be attempting to have his son take the blame.
I saw that. Now, that really shocked me, because even if it's true, usually a father will do the opposite. He would never implicate his son. But if it's not true, it's even more shocking.
Precisely. I thought it was extremely inappropriate that he was attempting to make his son take the hit. Because even if it were true, which I do not believe it is, because I viewed not only Alex Kaczynski's section, but there was another section that his son had, and I went through that, though I personally don't think the contents of that are really worthy of disclosure, because his son, unlike his father, doesn't hold a lifetime appointment to the judiciary. But the bottom
line, you're right.
Even if it were true, to quote the character Marlo Stanfield in the HBO series The Wire, "My name is my name." Those things were done under Judge Kaczynski's name, alex.kaczynski.com. It is a site that he operated. It is a site that he regularly handed out links to his published articles, which were also contained in there.
But do any other judges do this? Any other federal judges do this?
There's very few do what?
Have their own website like this, these types of websites?
Few judges do operate websites. Probably the most prestigious conservative thinker in the appellate courts is Judge Posner of the Seventh Circuit, and he holds a dual website with Judge Gary Becker, in which they debate various legal and philosophical topics. But there is no porn on it.
Mm-hmm. No, this is very unusual. Last question, because I could go on for an hour, because I thought this was a very keen insight into the arrogance of the judiciary, the systemic problems with a court that has absolute power and becomes absolutely corrupt. We know where that comes from, you know. Here's the question I'd like to know. Do you really believe that this porn case was landed on his desk by chance, as they say, just by a draw of the straw, so to speak?
Well, I will say that anybody who says that it was completely by chance doesn't understand the system. The way that these...
I'll tell you what, this is too good to say goodbye. Can you stay with us another few minutes? This is Mr. Cyrus Sanai, S-A-N-A-I, from Beverly Hills, who blew the lid on this case. And when he comes back, this is the most important part of the discussion, because we keep hearing that judges get cases at random choice. I don't believe it. I believe that it was shopped to him because he was predisposed in a certain manner. I'll be right back. Be here.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. We're talking about the judge in the porno case who declared a mistrial. We have with us the attorney who uncovered what the judge had on his own website, Mr. Cyrus Sanai. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Quickly, please, because we're almost out of time. Are cases randomly assigned, as we are told, or does it happen another way?
In this particular case, the original judge was, I believe, randomly assigned. However, he was removed from the case, I believe, at his own request, and my guess is probably because he just couldn't handle watching this material. And then it falls to the chief judge to figure out a method to randomly select either an appellate judge or another district court judge who can handle the case. In this situation, it's always picked from a much smaller pool from which the judge, the chief judge in this case, would have determined who falls into it. So it could have been a random decision for, assuming it followed the rules, it could have been a pool of one.
Isn't it odd that the chief judge, who's supposed to pick the judge, then takes it himself? Isn't that odd?
Well, again, what he's supposed to do is put together the people who are eligible to be able to sit on it. But as I said,
wait a minute. Knowing the judge's own website, it looked to me like he could handle what was on the docket there. It seemed like something he could very comfortably swim in, so to speak. Are you an expert? I mean, your cases are primarily copyright, Mr. Sanai?
I'm a general counsel of an internet company, so I know a lot about copyright.
Well, you and I should be in touch about my case. I'd like to learn more about what you do and discuss it further. Meanwhile, thank you very much for taking time out this afternoon to be on the Savage Nation regarding this case, which I think has tremendous implications that go well beyond the issue of pornography and the judge. I think it's the court itself that needs to be investigated.
I think there's the position I've held, and I wrote back in 2005, is that there are some very severe problems with the Ninth Circuit adjudication of the bulk of its cases. So I would agree with that.
Mr. Sanai, thanks for being with us on the Savage Nation. We're flat out of time. I really appreciate it. We'll have other topics. We're not going to talk about this anymore today. We're going to talk about, I think, far more important cases. And I don't mean tainted tomatoes. I mean what the Supreme Court did to the American people yesterday in deciding that Islamofascists have the rights that you have. They are totally wrong. They're siding with the enemy. They've committed sedition, in my opinion. And there is precedent for what I'm saying.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Michael Savage. That's all. Oh, I remember when this song came out. I can almost remember the day. Can you imagine? I love this, the way they sang that voice, that falsetto. Anyone singing falsetto anymore? Other than our politicians who speak as falsettos. Anyway, it's Rock and Roll Friday. We're talking about this, the news, the review. There's a great article by the founder of the Weather Channel that's worth paraphrasing. The founder of the Wedding Channel. Oh, God. Did I give someone else another billion-dollar idea? I think it exists already anyway. The Weather Channel. The founder of the Weather Channel says that global warming is a lie. He's challenging Al Gore to a debate. Gore will not debate any of the 21,000 scientists who say he's a liar. But he says, John Coleman, the founder of the Weather Channel, that global warming, the lie, is the reason that gasoline is so expensive. It's because of the environmentalist attack on fossil fuels. And I'm going to read you some of it in a minute. But first, I want to back up to the callers because you're calling for about the first hour. We started with me saying that I never met Tim Russert. I'm sure he's a nice guy, but I feel obligated to tell you that with all these eulogies, none of the big media is telling you that the man worked for Mario Cuomo, for Tip O'Neill, and for Pat Moynihan, all far left Democrats. You say, well, does it matter? I think it matters that you I know it matters. I mean, doesn't it matter that you should know that the man has a liberal bias and a far left liberal bias at that, and that every show he did had a sort of bias inherent in it? Don't you think you want to know that? Why is that irrelevant in an age when we rely upon the media for our roadmap to political truths? Don't you want to know who's drawing the map? I don't lie to you. I'm a political conservative, so at least you know where I'm coming from, and you could decide whether you agree with me, disagree with me, hate me, or love me. But at least you know where I'm coming from. I don't mince words. Why should they not tell you in all these eulogies today? One tripping them over the other. One tripping over themselves. I'm sure he was a nice man. I'm sorry he's gone. I hope he's in heaven. But that's irrelevant. What's relevant is if he's a media figure, then he's a public figure. If he's a public figure, he's subject to public scrutiny. And if he's subject to public scrutiny, then I have an obligation to disclose to you that Tim Russert was a lifetime far-left activist. Period. End of story. Now, I don't want to hear any more about this. He's just another newspaper guy who dropped dead. What is this? I can't believe it. It's like a president died. You know, what, are we going to have a state funeral now? Las Vegas, Nevada. Joe, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Michael. I'm in total agreement with what you're saying. I think it's an abomination that they would dominate the airwaves with this man's death and occupy an hour or more on each show about what this man was about. And it's insidious because, like you say, they don't express what his true leanings are, and it's a betrayal.
Yes. Well, look, they should certainly have mentioned it because he was one of the top guys in the news. Maybe a few minutes. But it's been all day long on all the channels, as though the world has come to an end.
Yeah, and it's their own.
Let's talk about some of the bigger stories that were worthy of covering. How our Supreme Court gave rights to the Guantanamo detainees that are equal to those of American citizens. I would think that's more important than a newsman dropping dead of a heart attack.
Exactly, because that undermines our own safety.
Or how about Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe threatening to kill anybody who votes against him tomorrow if he's voted against? Why don't they talk about that? Or about Hamas, who was given Gaza by the Israelis as a peace gesture, who's been raining rockets down on the Jews? How about that as a story to cover instead of the death of a newsman?
Well, this is their own self-importance. They put themselves...
There you go. That's right. They're crying for themselves. They see themselves in a number of years dead, and they hope everyone drops everything they're doing to talk about Tom Brokaw or talk about this one or that one, that suddenly God died.
Well, they elevate themselves on Mount Olympus like they're oracles of Delphi, and that they are the only people that understand the news, and they are there to interpret it for us.
No, you're right. No, wait, look, I got to tell you something. As somebody in the business who's an outsider, we all have a tendency to be arrogant, and that's the problem with this business, Joe. It's a balancing act at every moment of your day to not get too far carried away with your importance here.
Well, I live in Las Vegas, and I've seen entertainers from Sinatra on down, and they never comported themselves with the kind of arrogance that I've seen Tom Brokaw exhibit at a box.
Gee, that's interesting. So you were in the entertainment business?
Oh, I work in a casino, and I've been
Whatever. It doesn't matter what you did. You're saying when you rub shoulders with the top guys like Sinatra, they were never as arrogant as the media people?
No, they didn't comport themselves through the casino with the chutzpah that these people exhibit.
Yeah, and you're saying an imperious air, I would say. You could put it in those words. Would those apply?
Well, they have an aura about them that they're unapproachable. And they expect people to, you know, have adulation for them.
And yes, bow and scrape. But you're saying the top entertainers generally did not comport themselves that way?
No. No, absolutely not. They were very friendly with the staff and the casino people, and the people in Las Vegas.
Well, you know, but Joe, let's talk about it for a minute, because it was a different age, and I grew up in the same age in a way. The people they behave differently. I remember when I was a kid, I was just coming into working as a busboy or whatever up in the Catskill Mountains, and Sammy Davis Jr. was almost at the peak of his fame, or before it, let's say. He was riding high, and he had a Rolls Royce, and he was at the Concord Hotel in Monticello, New York. The other busboys and waiters were glowing about Sammy Davis Jr. because he gave them the keys to his Rolls Royce and said, take it for a spin, see if I care. No one could get over that.
Oh, yeah. He was a very nice man. He was a class guy.
I doubt very much whether Jay Leno would give you the keys to his Bugatti. All right. Thanks for the call. Oh, I'd rather talk about that than talk about global warming, which is such a fraud. Here you have the founder of the Weather Channel, who's a genuine climatologist, calling Al Gore every name under the sun. He says it's unbelievable. He says the battle cry of the high priest of global warming, Al Gore, and his fellow agenda-driven disciples as they predict the calamitous outcome from anthropogenic global warming. And he says as a result of this, he said gasoline prices are through the ceiling. He says all of this big-time science, international meetings, thick research papers, dire threats for the future, all of it comes down to their claim that the carbon dioxide in the exhaust from your car and in the smokestacks from a power plant is destroying the climate of planet Earth. He says, what an amazing fraud, what a scam. And then he goes on to why. He says, according to Al Gore, the polar ice caps will collapse and melt, and sea levels will rise 20 feet, inundating the coastal cities, making 100 million of us refugees. Some islands will disappear. The world food supply will be thrown into chaos. You know, you've heard the whole story. And he says, here is my rebuttal. And this is the interesting part. Please listen. He says, and remember who you're listening to now. This is the founder of the Weather Channel. I would say I have more faith in his view of weather than Al Gore. He says, there is no significant man-made global warming. There has not been any in the past. There is none now, and there is no reason to fear any in the future. The climate of the Earth is changing. It has always changed. But mankind's activities have not overwhelmed or significantly modified the natural forces. Now, here comes the best part. Through all history, Earth has shifted between two basic climate regimes, ice ages and what paleoclimatologists call interglacial periods. For the past 10,000 years, the Earth has been in an interglacial period. That might well be called nature's global warming, because what happens during an interglacial period is the Earth warms up, the glaciers melt, and life flourishes. Clearly, from our point of view, he writes, an interglacial period is greatly preferred to the deadly rigors of an ice age. Mr. Gore and his crowd would have us believe that the activities of man have overwhelmed nature during this interglacial period and are producing an unprecedented, out-of-control warming. He goes on, it is not happening. Worldwide, there was a significant natural warming trend in the 80s and 90s as a solar cycle peaked with lots of sunspots and solar flares. That ended in 1998, and now the sun has gone quiet with fewer and fewer sunspots, and the global temperatures have gone into decline. Earth has cooled for almost 10 straight years, so I ask Al Gore, where's the global warming? He goes on, the cooling trend is so strong that recently the head of the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change had to acknowledge it. He speculated that nature has temporarily overwhelmed mankind's warming, and it may be 10 years or so before the warming returns. Oh, really? We are supposed to be in a panic about man-made global warming, and the whole thing takes a 10-year break because of the lack of sunspots? If this weren't so serious, it would be laughable. And then he goes into the science and the panel on climate change and how it's a fake, and how the focus on atmospheric carbon dioxide is nonsense. You have to read this. What's frightening, though, is that most students in America have been forced to watch Al Gore's propaganda. And I'm telling you, my friends, you ought to read a little bit more before you take the con man's word for it. One last word that I'd like to add here on the Savage Nation. I think it's ironic, if not comic, that Al Gore's father, Senator Gore, after retiring from the U.S. Senate, went to work for Arm & Hammer and ran the Occidental Coal Company. Don't you find it paradoxical that Al Gore, who was born with a silver spoon in his mouth, had a silver spoon forged in coal, as it were? More than that, I wrote an article back in 98 about the Elk Hills oil petroleum scandal. Al Gore was in charge of the transfer of I believe, millions of barrels of oil in Elk Hills that were put aside for our naval reserve. He forced the government, which he was running at the time, to sell that oil, which was deposited in salt licks, or salt mines, rather, for the use of our Navy. He said he wanted to privatize these oil reserves, but instead of putting it out to open bid to all oil companies, he sold it without bid to the Occidental Petroleum Company, the very same company that his father had worked for. He got away with this. It's amazing to me that I know this and a few other people know this, and yet Al Gore walks around like God Almighty with the arrogance that the media bestows upon him, with even guys like Tim Russert, may God rest his soul, never asking him a single question that would make any sense whatsoever. They're all in it together. Beware the government media complex. I'm Michael Savage. I'll be back.
Savage.
Maybe, baby, I'll have you. Maybe, baby, you'll be true. Maybe, baby, I'll have you for me.
It is the Savage Nation.
It's funny, honey.
Working toward the truth every day, one day at a time. You know, I live in the most liberal area in America in terms of a city, a whole city, San Francisco. The area is very liberal, and yet I have an enormous audience, many of whom would declare themselves to be political liberals, who are fanatic and loyal fans of the show, who probably don't agree with most of what I say, but they listen for one reason, and I know why they listen. And that is because they like an educated opinion. Even if they disagree with it, they can try their opinions against mine. And they may change in some way without even admitting it to themselves. And over time, they may even come to agree with me. I don't expect them to. But it's like all the years I would listen to, I don't know what, NPR when I wasn't in the radio. I couldn't believe what I was listening to. But I would disagree with them. Almost the whole time I would listen to them, I didn't agree with a word they said. But I'd listen, and I'd hear the inherent bias in it. But that's what makes for a complete person, is the willingness to listen to your political opposite and to sharpen your own viewpoints. However, I want to remind you that I have a real degree in a science, several sciences of that, from the University of California at Berkeley. I'm very proud of it. That I'm proud of. I'm proud of it because I killed myself to get a real degree from a great university. I'm proud of it because my dissertation was based upon reality and was published as a book. It's almost unheard of. And I'm also telling you this for another reason, not to show you how great I am, but to tell you that when I study something, I'm not just bringing an ordinary, let us say, news person, journalist ideas. I have the skills to analyze data. Most of the people in the media don't. They're busy. They're harassed. They have to run to a story, whatever they have to do. I spent years in the wilderness, like Rip Van Savage, doing nothing but analyzing scientific papers and data. And I do the same thing with world events and news. And that's why I say to you, when I see an overt phony like Al Gore and his minions of liars getting away with this big lie that's going to cost us our civilization if he's not challenged, I have to say to you that when I find that the Weather Channel founder is as passionate as I am, if not more so, in trying to stop this global warming lie, I got to tell you about it. Because he said, if we don't stop these people, he said, I'll quote him, if Al Gore and his global warming scare dictates the future policy of our governments, the current economic downturn could indeed become a recession, drift into a depression, and our modern civilization could fall into an abyss and would largely be a direct result of the global warming frenzy. I agree with him. Now, this is not liberal or conservative. Liberals might be biased towards wanting to believe Al Gore because he's a certifiable liberal on social issues. That doesn't mean you should buy everything the guy says. He's also a businessman. Why would you believe a guy necessarily just because you like his politics? Okay, I made my point. Now we'll move on. New York City. Floyd, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, as a scientist, do you still believe it is impossible for one country to control another country's weather? And I have some kind of like backup that
you have to really tell me what you're thinking, because I don't know what you mean. You're saying someone's causing the floods in the Midwest?
About 2 years ago, when all that bombing was going back and forth between us and Iran, saying, you know, that we might bomb them, Iran said if we did anything, they would be able to knock all our electricity off in our country. Now, well, they
wait a minute. I'm functioning right now. I have electricity.
No. Well, we didn't bomb them yet.
You know, I'm not afraid of Iran. I don't know what everyone's afraid of, that man in platform shoes. I don't understand this fear of this maniac in Iran.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation holding on to a piece of America like a piece of apple pie. Immigrant son who's in love with the country. I can't help myself. Forgive me for not joining the rush to hate America. Forgive me for not joining the elites in the media who hate the country that gives them so much power and fame. Forgive me for not joining the entertainers who claim they want to leave the country. Anyway, here we are. It's a beautiful Friday, whatever. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Any topic is... You know, it's open mic to Mike Friday. We've covered a lot today. We covered the porn judge. We covered the Russert cover-up of his politics by the big media. But I want to go back to it for a minute because death affects me, particularly public death, in that it makes us all think about our own mortality. And who doesn't think about their own mortality after the age of six? I think the only beings that don't think about their own mortality are dogs unless they're thrown into a pit bull ring. And mortality is with us. Our mortality is always with us. Or am I crazy? I've always been conscious of that. Are you not conscious of your own mortality? See, man is a strange creature. We have to function every day as though we're immortal when we know we're mortal. That's number one. So right away creates a schizophrenia. Every day you have to get up, brush your teeth, do push-ups, do chin-ups, go to the gym, take your vitamins, look at yourself in the mirror, do whatever you have to do and say, hey, I'm looking good. And you know it's all rot anyway at the end of the day. You're going to decay. It's terrible. But we have but we were created with the ability to deal with it and live through it and bite into a sandwich at night instead of giving up. In other words, you're going to roll up in a corner and say, I can't go on because I'm going to die one day. Most of us don't. Most of us can handle it. Some of us crack up from the duality of this consciousness. I understand that. I told you about a story of a woman in Queens who was a doctor's wife and what happened to her when she came to this. You know, she had two children. She went crazy. She wandered around the neighborhood taking touched any hand she could find, children, garbage men. All she asked was, why are we born to die? So everyone, and they, the doctor's wife went mad, they whispered. It was 171st Street, I think. And it was sad because it became a whispering campaign that the doctor's wife went mad. I happen to like the doctor because after work he took apart a motor in his garage. I think it was for a Thunderbird. And he laid out every piece of that Thunderbird on a sheet of the engine. I had never seen the inside of an engine before. But I knew he was a doctor, so right away he was already as close to heaven as you could get. And that he could take apart an engine, my God. But that he would have a wife who would go crazy over the question of mortality was a great tragedy to me. But getting back to the issue of Tim Russert's very public passing today, and let's just leave it at that. I've already expressed my statement that it's we're not going to get into false. I don't know the guy, never met him, but I did think it was important for you to know about his politics, which has been left out of every eulogy. And I don't think it should be left out of every eulogy. They should say proudly he was an uber-liberal all his life, worked for Tip O'Neill, worked for Moynihan, and worked for Governor Cuomo. I mean, it's part and parcel of his popularity in New York, where at NBC, where it's a very liberal network. You know, if they're so proud of their liberalism, they ought to just say he was one of us. But I want to talk more about the mortality. Now, here's a guy who dies at 58. Let's talk about that. My father died at about the same age, but he came from another generation. He smoked two packs a day. He had a couple of bad cards dealt at him early in life. He suffered terribly as an immigrant who came over from the old country, had to learn a new language. He had a lot of stress on him. I lead a very stressful life, probably 10 times more stressful than all of my ancestors going back seven generations. You think about this 3 hours a day, you can hate my guts, but you try it. I'm not complaining. But when I entered radio, 15 years ago, I was a totally different person before I came in. Not politically. I was different physically. I put on a lot of weight. I eat foods I wouldn't touch for the last 30 years before the media. I had to start feeding the furnace to do this show. You think of me with a barrel chest like an opera singer. And I got to get up here and I got to sing every day for 3 hours. So I got to feed the furnace. Then after it's over, I got to dampen down the furnace. And that requires feeding the furnace is a certain number of calories, lots of calories. Then coffee. Without the caffeine, the calories don't get consumed rapidly enough. Then when it's over, I'm walking around full of surging with adrenaline. I got to turn it off somehow. So I turn it off with a couple of drinks, whatever. It's a disastrous lifestyle, the media. And I'm surprised more people haven't dropped dead at an early age. But I want to go back to some other element of this that's very important. I, over the years, when I was in the health business, had noticed in the years I was a consultant in the nutrition field, there were some men I had met who were very good research scientists who got sick very early after trips abroad and died. Now, what am I saying here? I don't exactly know where I'm going here, but I'm fishing for something. I believe that travel unto itself is extremely stressful. Let's start with that. I've always told you that. By and large, I've stopped long-distance travel. I find it extremely stressful. And I know that we as Americans are a very restful people, as is true for most of Western Europe. They're on the move all the time. The minute they have a day off, they got to go to Paris for lunch. You think of a vacation. Would you ever think of staying home for a week on a vacation? Most of you wouldn't. You'd think you're a loser. If you have a week or two off, would you stay home? Would you walk around the neighborhood? Would you go to lunch in your own town? Or drive over the bridge to a near city? No, most of you have to go to Paris or London or Provence or whatever you have to do, cruise. And I'm not knocking any of it. If you're younger, good luck to you. But at a certain point, I am telling you that the stresses of travel are overwhelming to the human organism. I'm talking about the stress of getting on the airplane, the planning. Waiting in line, the adrenaline's up. Now you're doing a strip search. Now you're being stripped down to your underwear with a prod put in between your legs by people you've tried to avoid your whole life. That's already scaring you because you're going against every instinct you have would say, don't let him put a thing in my legs. He's putting a next. You're getting your dirty feet. And then you're waiting. Then you're on the plane. And 93 hours sitting like a sardine. And don't tell me about first class, please. There is no first class in American Air. In the air. There's no first class unless you charter your own jet or own one. And even there, you're under stress anyway. You're at 35,000 feet. What do you think? Your grandfather wouldn't have had a heart attack looking out the window? But you've adjusted your mind to looking out the window like it's nothing. But you're living like a god. You're living in a way that kings of near 100 years ago couldn't have lived. All of you, the ordinary man today lives better than a king lived 110 years ago. You can't believe it. Look at the things you do. But what effect this is having on you? Now you get to Italy. Now you go to the best hotel in Rome, and what do you have? You have a strange bed, strange mattress, strange pillow, strange germs on the bed cover, strange sounds outside the window. You're upset no matter how good it looks, no matter how nice the furniture is. Your body is not your body's on alert because you're in a strange place. So the animal in you is on alert. Now your time schedule is off. Now you're going to go. What are you going to do? You're going to have a big meal in the best restaurant, and you're going to gorge yourself on holiday food. Holiday Italian food, big, heavy meal, lots of alcohol, God knows what kind of dessert, again with impunity. Then what are you going to do? Then you're going to shake hands, you're going to go back to your bed, and then what are you going to do? Your body is being assailed at every moment. Now, you do this for 7 days with the wife and the kids. Then you have to repeat the whole flying back. Then instead of coming home, instead of going home and getting in bed for a day, relaxing, taking a hot bath, unwinding, boom, right to the studio. I'm God. I can do it all. Never heard of a heart attack. Never heard of a stress. It's modern times. My friends, your body is the same as that of the Neanderthal, or close to it. Let's say Paleolithic is what I meant. Your body is the same as that of the Paleolithic man who walked the earth. That is correct. Your society has changed, but your body has not changed. Your diet has changed, but your needs have not changed. And the need for calm, the need for rest, the need for some kind of normal sedation has never left the human being. And yet we conduct ourselves as though we're not subject to all of the laws of nature. We are. And I am telling you that travel is stressful. And you have to understand that maybe this is a time for you to breathe in deeply and think about it. Why do you stress yourself like this? Why do you push yourself like this? Why must you go somewhere? Did your father or your did he have to go somewhere on a vacation? Did he have to get some, did he have to go to Italy? Did he have to go to France? Go if you live in New York, go to Little Italy. Then don't go to Italy. Go to a French restaurant. Why do you have to travel? I almost died twice in traveling. Both times it was to Asia from food poisoning. That was my experience. I will never go to Asia as long as I live. I know two other people who almost died going to Asia and coming back from unknown viruses. If you think that you're going into all of these foreign places and you're not being subjected to organisms that your body is not capable of marshaling and any kind of resistance to, you're mistaken. And you're taking them in and they're having other effects upon you. So, you know, okay, we could talk about those things. But if you want to talk about that, and that's not a bad topic. Okay, we can talk about that. Now, play rock and roll for a second. I'll take a caller as I take a breath because I don't want to push myself too hard today. I just talked about stress. That's all.
I'll always want you because my heart is true. Come closer, and I'll tell you all the ABCs.
It is the Savage Nation Rock and Roll Friday. Teddy Pete on the kitchen floor, so he's regressing, my dog. Maybe it's the heat or whatever. I woke up a puddle in the kitchen. He hadn't done it in a year. I was wondering why he was being so, you know, like limp, laying around looking like a relative died. You know, normally they're playful, but the minute they do something, then they get, they're smart. They know when they do something wrong. But I thought about it. I got mad at him. I didn't hit him, but I said, what are you doing? You're grown up, man. You're 4 years old, 7, 14, 28. Well, today they're 7-1 doesn't matter anymore. They live to like 29, a dog. With operations and money people put in 23, I never heard of anything like it. The dogs live longer than Alexander the Great lived, or close to it. So it's no longer, they died at 10, 7-1. Now it's not 10, say 20, so it's 3-1. We were promised 70. I should be dead already. What's 70? 70? Oh, my God. I better make my peace with the world. So, yeah, all right. Two people called me, Tim Russ. I didn't even know who he was. Look, I did know the name. I couldn't picture him for a minute. I don't happen to watch the news. I said, which one? The garbage man's son? Yes. The fat guy? Yeah. That's all. I said, he seemed like a nice guy, but that's all. What is this adulation? Because, again, as the caller from Las Vegas said, what the people in the news are doing are crying for themselves. They figure when they die, the whole world's going to stop, and they're going to talk about, oh, Wolf Blitzer, what a wonderful man. Started out as a dog catcher in Maryland, and before long, the whole world was listening to the dog catcher. That's the, oh, wonderful man. They'll tell you nothing about his background or his foreground or his forehead. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Now that's the sound of America. If there's ever a seminal sound, it's this kind of sound. That's when this country could see any of these third world, don't get me started right now, sitting here shaking over the man in platform heels from Iran. The man has no military whatsoever. And people calling afraid of him. If we had a real president, he wouldn't be walking the earth, that Iranian dictator, that Hitler. Send in the Southern Air Force. What are you going to do? I have my own view of the world. It may not be your view. Want to make nice with Hitler, huh? You know what? You want to be a lampshade, don't include me. All right, take it easy. Knock it off. They hang homosexuals, but the homosexuals love the Hitler of Iran. Go figure that one out. Hates Jews, calls Jews every name under the sun, but Jewish liberals say don't go to war with them. You hear this? And you wonder why I'm a conservative. You wonder why I differ from Republicans. And don't confuse the two, please. Go to michaelsavage.com. We still have the article up defining the difference between Republicans and conservatives. A giant chasm. I'm using the word chasm a lot. Anyway, you heard my thing on travel and illness. No one called. What are you going to do about it? Portland, Oregon. Gregory, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael. Your points about the that clip just from the restaurateur, a chef for 20 years. I've been driving a truck for 2 years, gained a lot of weight. I eat healthy now. I got fat eating pastries, but my weight has gone way up. The travel has got me way stressed out. I used to ride two bicycles for 20 years, no car, cooking in a kitchen, riding in East Bay, and now I've gained a lot of weight. I've gained 60 pounds under stress. Let me, your points about the restaurant business, those restaurateurs are driving nice cars. They're taking long vacations. They own more than two houses. Your points about them are so true. I know the business being a chef and a sous chef.
Oh, wait, but I'm not putting down restaurant owners. You haven't heard me do that. I mean, what I was talking about is the stress of travel. It's a little different. I don't know where you're coming up with bashing restaurant owners. I haven't done that, Greg.
You just played a clip, though, while I was waiting for you to return of the restaurateur talking about hiring the illegals. And you
made... Wait a minute. Where did that clip play? That must be a promo somewhere. Was that it, guys?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I didn't hear that one.
Anyway, I
hear you. Look, let me say this to you. There are a lot of people who live one kind of life, and they can lead a healthy lifestyle along with it, with the bicycling and the exercise and the diet. And then when they have to shift gears or shift professions, sometimes you have to put that aside and you have to compromise even your knowledge of health in order to make a living, Gregory. And I have a surprise for you. You may live longer than you would have as a health food nut. You know, I got to say this to you. Just because you put on weight and you're eating a little bit doesn't mean you're gonna get sick necessarily. I remember when I was in my 30s, I was an avid runner. And what happened was, all of a sudden, there was a spate of early deaths of guys in their 30s. They were all lean, and they were all like health food guys, and they were dropping dead. Runners were dying like flies all over the Bay Area. And then one day, I was running up a hill. I used to do this regularly in the back of a valley to a waterfall. I was 135 pounds or what, 140 pounds. I was in great shape, gaunt. And I heard a voice in my head screaming, stop running. You're killing yourself. Stop. I thought I was going crazy. I thought I was having a psychotic episode, but the voice didn't stop. So what was that voice? It wasn't outside my body. It was inside my own head. What was it called? Hey, it was the still small voice that became a little louder, because the still small voice was saying, kiddo, you better stop running up this hill because you're going to wind up dropping dead. And I did. I never ran again. Never. I won't even run to a mailbox. I won't run to catch nothing. I won't run. I don't run. I bicycle once in a while. But even that I have my own theory on. People have argued with me. I use a sort of Asian meditative theory on exercise. Even when I bicycle, I don't push my body where my heart's pounding. Never. I will just slightly raise my pulse, and ever so slightly. I don't even mean up to the level of the treadmill test. I never do that. To me, it's deadly. I'm surprised more people don't drop dead on the treadmill. I had a treadmill last year. They get you up to a level. It's frightening. Boom, bang, bing, you know, you feel your heart in your ears like you ever had. The last I felt it like that, I was 17 making out with a girl in Queens. I haven't the ears. I don't think that's very healthy to run your blood through your body at that speed over a certain age. Not at all. I mean, you can blow a clot right out of your arteries and drop dead of a stroke on top of it all. There is a way to exercise without pushing your body to beyond its limits or even to its limit. If you have a nice car, how often do you race that car up to 8,000 RPM? Would you do that often? Or to put it another way, I have a boat with two diesel engines on it. It's redlined at 3,000 RPM. Both engines are redlined at 3,000. Even from the day I bought it, when I was told the engines are, the factory says you can run them for an hour at 2,900 and nothing would happen. I never did it. I would occasionally take them up to 2,900, but in a year now or more, I rarely go over 2,600 RPM. I don't like the sound of an engine screaming. Now, inside your body, you want to make your engine scream, and I'm talking about it because of Tim Russert's death. The man was pushing himself beyond his limits. That is my opinion. No doubt he had some genetic predisposition towards cardiovascular disease, but I don't really know. I mean, they're not going to disclose his medical records. But to run on a vacation and run back from a vacation and run into a studio and right away start recording and run this all over the country, have you no idea what kind of stress that puts on a... How McCain does this, I don't know. I worry about him every day. I am telling you right now, I have terrible fears for this guy, for what he's doing to himself.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Boom, it's the Savage Nation Rock and Roll Friday. So the media is in shock. One of theirs has died. I didn't know the man. I hope he's in heaven. He looked like a nice guy, but they're all leaving out the fact that he worked for three of the most ultra uber liberal politicians in American history. Tip O'Neill, he worked for Cuomo, and he worked for Moynihan. I say, is it important at this time to say it? I believe it is. That's why I'm saying it. Now I want to move on to the next part of it. Russer died of a heart attack. Okay, I know a lot about heart attacks because my father and grandfather and great-grandfather died of heart attacks. And all of my life, I've been running from a heart attack. And of course, one day I'll probably meet it, whether I want to or not. But right now, I consider every day to be a lucky day because I never thought I'd live this long, owing to the genetic inheritance that I have. But it's one of the things, this genetic time bomb that I have ticking in me, that drove me around the world seeking answers, long before the medical establishment would even acknowledge that there was any relationship between what you put in your mouth and what wound up in your arteries. I was publishing books on the subject, and I wrote many books in the field of nutrition and health, not as a primary researcher, but as a primary educator in a popular manner. And I believe that I have things that I can offer you, the listener, on this issue that are worth mentioning. Now, what do we know about coronary artery disease? What can you do to prevent the occlusion of your arteries, if anything? Now, the medical establishment, even they will admit today, there are many things you can do, and that's a blessing. They've come a long way, baby. I mean, I have a cardiologist who is very knowledgeable about diet and nutrition, and even goes so far, and he's a regular medical doctor who does surgery, who I haven't needed that service of his, who understands my doctorates in the field, but he will recommend niacin today, which is a shock when you consider that 20 years ago, I wrote a book in 1972, 70s already, the books were, my early books in nutrition were in the 70s, but the medical establishment was laughing at it. In fact, when I got my PhD in 78 in nutrition, I was laughed at by people with medical degrees saying, oh, what does nutrition have to do with health? What does it have to do with heart disease? Pshaw. Well, all right. Thank God things have changed. Everyone's grown up. But they haven't gone far enough. There's so many things I could talk about right now that I think I will. I'll blow away all the other topics we've talked about. One, don't forget the stress in your life. And I want to back up for a minute. The best theories on health and disease that I've ever encountered were the ones that said that disease is based upon a pie with three parts. One part is genetic, which you can do nothing about because you can't change your genes. One part is environmental, which you can do a lot about because that's what you control. And then there's a third part, and I don't know how big it is of that pie, called the unknown. And the unknown is something that we don't know much about. We're learning, you know, what that unknown, those unknown factors are, and each disease is different. Each person is different. There are mysterious factors. You could throw in the spiritual in there if you want because that plays a big role in disease and health, as you well know, and I don't even want to go there. So I'd like to talk only about the biomedical, the stuff that I'm pretty sure has definitive proof to back up what I'm about to tell you. Back in the early 1950s, there was a genius pathologist at Harvard by the name of McCulley. See, I remember these articles right in my head. McCulley discovered that vitamin B6 or pyridoxine could prevent the occlusion of arteries, meaning the clogging of arteries, in rabbits that he was studying. In other words, you gave two sets of rabbits diets that were known to cause the rapid deterioration of the artery's diameter or circumference, meaning the interior of the artery would be occluded by the diet. And one group was given that just as the diet. The other group was given the diet plus vitamin B6, pyridoxine. And the control group, the group that was given the B6, their arteries remained healthier longer, okay? And then this was a very, very important study, and I remember I cited it in my book in 1979. I don't remember the year anymore. The year's blurred by. I wrote a book years ago, 83, called Nutrition Against Aging, way ahead of its time, in which McCulley's study was cited. So he knew about vitamin B6 then, but he also knew about something that the smart cardiologist will tell you about today, very important components. And I don't want to spend the whole day talking about it, but some people process foods in one way and some people's bodies process them in another way. And you have to look at your blood chemistry and you have to understand that vitamin C is very important in preventing your arteries from occluding, as is vitamin E. The work of the Shute brothers is still great work, despite the detractors in the AMA who say that their work is invalid. They're wrong. They're 100% wrong because they always set it up with inferior quality vitamin E, number one. In other words, vitamin E is a broad-spectrum vitamin. It's not a single tocopherol. It's multi-tocopherols. That's number one. So they always select a single tocopherol instead of multi-tocopherol. Then they don't give the organism or the person they're testing enough vitamin E to have any effect whatsoever. Then they say vitamin E has no effect whatsoever. So it's all rubbish. It's the medical establishment trying to sell you on drugs or surgery. Now, there's a place for drugs and surgery. Don't get me wrong. But certainly there's a bigger place for preventing the need for drugs and surgery. And that would be what you could do before you reach the surgeon's office. And God bless the surgeons for being the skilled experts that they are. I don't know how we could live without them. Bless them all. But let's not throw out what we can do before arriving at the surgeon's office for that bypass, God forbid, or for the stent or whatever they're doing today. So you then have other components that you have to watch out for in your diet, and I don't have the time nor the inclination to go into every one of them. I'm giving you one example. Can I direct you to a single book source on this? There are many good books on it. I don't know of any right now. I do know that – no, I don't think I touch on this, and I know Healing Children Naturally has nothing on heart disease because I never associated heart disease with children, so it's not in there. I wrote some other books that aren't available. Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's, for example, which is still sold on my website, has an antioxidant diet that's fabulous. And many of the things you're supposed to take to prevent heart disease, you're supposed to also take and do to prevent Alzheimer's disease, strangely enough. It's a very interesting connection there because the Alzheimer's disease is a totally different disease than the occlusion of the arteries. Totally different. Don't get me wrong. You're talking about amyloid plaques, and I know a lot about it because I studied it on a very intimate level for a long period of time. But amyloid plaques are not the same thing as coronary artery plaques, although antioxidants can probably prevent the amyloid plaques as well. So therefore, you wind up using the same type of antioxidants. And the reason it's worth talking about is because just as the political waters have been muddied by the blending of the two parties, by the government media complex, where people don't even know the difference anymore between a conservative and a Republican, the same has happened in the health field. And this is where I'm going. Same has happened in the health field. 20 years ago, 25 years ago, it's a long time ago, there was a devout movement, a health movement in this country, and it was led primarily by Linus Pauling when he was alive. I had some friends who were also leaders in the field, one of whom just died last year, Bob Cathcart, a wonderful doctor who knew a lot about vitamin C and a lot about other things. But Linus Pauling would have been the messiah of the field. And consequently, the ideas were well received and people understood it and there was good research on it. But since Pauling died, there's been a counterattack by the pharmaceutical industry and by the medical establishment, the AMA, with one flawed study after another trying to disprove the validity of anything nutritional, whether it be diet or vitamin or herb. They're trying to show that none of these things have any value whatsoever. And, of course, that's a shame because these are so important in our life. And consequently, many people are under the mistaken belief that they can eat anything they want as long as they jog around the block or run on the treadmill. Nothing could be further from the truth. As a matter of fact, I could not tell you why Mr. Russett met his end the way he did. I have no idea what his diet was. I don't know what his cardiac profile was. But I would guess that most people in the media are very arrogant about their health, and they are under the mistaken notion that they can lead these high-stress lives, eat any damn thing they please, have as many drinks as they want, schmooze at parties as late as they want, and then get up and go and work and do the same thing the next day, and they don't need any vitamins because that's for a bunch of nuts. And what's intriguing to me, and this is very interesting to me, is that you want to talk about the confluence of the health food industry and politics. This is really interesting. 25, 30 years ago, actually going back further than that, it was the right-wingers who were fanatics on health foods and on vitamins. It was the conservatives who were afraid of contaminants in our water and in our foods, who worked against the poisoning of our foods and waters, who were very big in the vitamin industry. What's interesting to me is that some of the most devout anti-nutrition forces in our government today are guys like Waxman. Waxman, a devout far-left liberal, is one of the strongest opponents of good, sound nutrition knowledge and a good front man for the drug industry. It's amazing to me. 1-800-449-8255. Look, if you want to talk about this, we can talk about it because this is a big topic for all of us. Coronary artery disease killed Russert. Coronary artery disease is the leading cause of death in the United States of America. I know a lot about it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Somewhere beyond the sea. This is Michael Savage. We're talking about heart attacks, sudden death from heart attacks, which virtually every man over 30 worries about. Every day they're grabbing, oh, there it is, oh. They're sitting in the car, the couch, sitting with the kid. Oh, what's that? It's gas 99% of the time. But we're all cardioneurotic. Now, I have been accused of being homophobic, which I am not, but I am definitely homocysteine phobic. And I want to talk about homocysteine for a minute because I mentioned McCulley's early studies with rabbits in the 50s and how he discovered that pyridoxine or B6 reduced the risk of occluding the rabbit's arteries, and it was directly related to homocysteine, which I didn't get to in the last segment. A decent cardiologist today will test for many blood components, serum components, including homocysteine. And if your doctor isn't doing it, he's not at the level that he should be. Homocysteine is a chemical compound, and it is a homolog of the naturally occurring amino acid cysteine. So let's forget the chemistry for a minute. The important thing to know is that a high level of blood serum homocysteine, meaning if you take a blood test, make sure your doctor's prescribing a test for homocysteine levels, because a high level of blood serum homocysteine is a powerful risk factor for cardiovascular disease. And what you have to know conversely with that, although it's not inversely proportionate, is that deficiencies of certain vitamins can lead to high homocysteine levels. Those would be folic acid, pyridoxine, or B12. Now, that does not mean that supplementing with pyridoxine, folic acid, or B12 would necessarily reduce the concentration of homocysteine in the bloodstream. It may or may not. You have to study this a little more detail to do it. I'm particularly very hesitant to recommend that anyone take increased levels of vitamin B12. It's a very tricky vitamin. Cyanocobalamin is a very tricky vitamin. And, so, you know, you go back to Adele Davis. Many of you may remember the names. She was a goddess of the nutrition field 30, 20 years ago, and she wrote some wonderful popular books. But I did a nutritional autopsy of her in my book, The Skeptical Nutritionist, which was published in 83 as well. God, those are big years for me. Macmillan published the book. And I called it a nutritional autopsy. Now, she died of a very specific type of cancer that just happens to have been triggered that type of cancer, by high levels of vitamin B12. She was also a proponent of extraordinarily high levels of vitamin B12, which I am very leery of. So before you start, you know, downing B12, be careful. As far as pyridoxine, I have very little hesitation to tell you that you should be making sure you're getting a vitamin B6. And the exact amounts I don't want to discuss right now. But vitamin B6 or pyridoxine will definitely, as a supplement, you should definitely be getting, because it reduces the concentration of homocysteine in the bloodstream. It's very important for you to know that. And that's why I want to talk about it today, because many of you know this, some of you don't know it, et cetera. Ocala, Florida, Stewart, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm wondering if any of your callers have brought up the speculation of deep vein thrombosis. Because I bring this up because I heard that Russert just flew back from Rome or something.
Yes. And yes. So you're saying the deep vein thrombosis is a result of sitting for a long period of time without moving, and people, even young people, can die from deep vein thrombosis from long flights.
I do a lot of flying, transcontinental, and some of my flights are 6 hours in duration. And this worries me big time. I get up and I move around, and once
yes.
I get to the airport, I get a massage.
Well, you should also, when you're in the seat of an airplane, I know it sounds odd, but you should lift your legs every, you know, 45 minutes or so. Now, what do you care what people think of you? You know, it's your life, not theirs. You could do it sitting in a chair. You could just take your feet off the ground and lift them up as close to your chest as you can. Do 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times. You'll get that blood flowing again.
Thanks.
Thanks for the call. No, there's little things you can do. Believe me, sometimes things, simple things are very important to do. Baltimore, Rodolfo, you're a pilot. You want to talk about travel stress. Go ahead, please.
Oh, yes, sir. Former Navy pilot here. Fly for United Airlines. And the sleep thing, specifically going to Europe, is a killer. All sorts of pilots have different tricks they use when they get into Europe. They'll either power through, stay awake. But the bottom line is you're screwing with your body, and anything you do is really damage control. And you see a lot of these guys, especially guys that go deep South America, which is all-night flying, they turn gray in a matter of a couple of years.
Isn't that intriguing, what you just said? That's a very interesting observation. And that's, of course, from the stress.
It is. It's not good for your body. You're doing bad things. And as far as exercise, I found that exercise kind of mitigates some of the problems because it forces your body to wake up during exercise, then you could sleep better. But, you know, that's tricky, too, as you get older. I stopped running recently. I'm 43, almost 44.
Good move. Your joints can't take it. And also, you're running the risk of sudden occlusion from running. I don't care what anyone tells you.
Savvy.
So we're talking about sudden heart attack because of Tim Russert's death, and I'm focusing now on homocysteine. It's a very important component that most, you know, modern cardiologists will test for homocysteine. They've seen the work, and they're very good about disclosing this to people. But I want to show you about a recent study that followed 80,000 women for 14 years. That's an enormously important epidemiological study. So 80,000 women, not 8 women, not for 4 days, 80,000 women for 14 years. They found that the incidence of heart attacks in these women was lowest among those who used multivitamins or had the highest intake of B6 and folic acid from dietary sources. That's very important for you to understand, that multivitamins are a lifesaver if, and the if is, and there's the caveat, you know what you're taking, you know the manufacturer, and you know how much to take. I'm not going to do a whole show on it because I'm not selling you anything. I've written books on this for so many years, and I'm only doing this today because of this, the focus on it today. Here's another study on lowering the serum concentrations of homocysteine, because every study shows that it reduces the risk of adverse cardiovascular events. Now, you can look this up on the internet. Just look up homocysteine, and you'll read about it. Just remember that dietary supplementation with folic acid can reduce elevated homocysteine levels in most people. And the usual therapeutic dose is 1 milligram a day. And if it doesn't work, then you add vitamin B6 and B12. You add that to the regimen. And the doctors might be able to tell you how much to take of all of it. So that's what you need to know about. And by the way, And here's the interesting part, is that the connection between this amino acid, homocysteine, and cardiovascular disease was first, let's say, noted in the medical profession in a large way about 25 years ago, when it was seen that people with a rare condition called homocysteine urea developed severe cardiovascular disease when they were teenagers or in their 20s and they died. Why? They have a condition called homocysteine urea, in which an enzyme deficiency causes homocysteine to accumulate in the blood to be excreted in the urine. And as I said, people with that disease develop severe cardiovascular disease both in their teens and in their 20s. And the homocysteine urea, which is not that common, is transmitted by a recessive gene. If both parents have the gene, the resultant offspring have very high plasma homocysteine levels. And people who receive the defective gene from only one parent do not develop the disease, but still will often have a mildly elevated plasma level of homocysteine. About one person in 100 carries such gene. But an abnormal elevation of homocysteine can also occur among people whose diet contains inadequate amounts of folic acid, B6 or B12. And it doesn't matter what causes the elevation of homocysteine, whether it's genetic or diet, supplementation with one or more of these vitamins will lower plasma levels of homocysteine. That's so important for you to know. I don't think many of you know that. Some of you know it. It's important you know it real fast. And instead of the media going on and on about Tim Russert's life, they ought to go on and on about what you can do about heart disease. I'm sure some of them will pick it up and they'll have some quack on that will tell you do nothing. Eat a healthy diet, eat the four food groups, and see your doctor. That's what you'll hear with a guy with a heart, now a plastic heart, some schmuck with a stethoscope. Will sit there and say, here's the heart, here's the arteries, and don't pay any attention to the quacks that tell you to take vitamins. Even though the literature is pretty clear on this, the AMA quacks will tell you do nothing, except go to them after you have a heart attack, and they'll clean your arteries out with a Roto-Rooter. So do what you want, you know what I'm saying? Do what you want. You want the information? I gave you the information of what you can do to lower your homocysteine levels. And if you don't believe me because I'm a conservative, then good luck to you. Then out of spite, go kill yourself. Now, what do you want to talk about? I don't have a current nutrition book on this subject. I have The Healing Children Naturally, which is superb. You see how brilliant I am in nutrition if you just heard it for the first time. Well, what I just told you about heart disease, I can give you for 30 other conditions for children, how to prevent and treat in Healing Children Naturally. That book should be actually required reading for every young parent. But it's on my website. That's the only place it's distributed. I have never bothered taking it any further. I'm also selling Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's, which is not related to this directly but indirectly, because I have a whole chapter on improving nutrition for a healthy brain, which also includes a lot about antioxidants and nutrients to prevent the brain in general, not just for Alzheimer's disease, but in preventing the brain from sludging, for example, of the red blood cells using niacin, oxygen starvation. You know, there's a lot more to senility than just Alzheimer's disease. There are numerous types of senility. So if you show depression, anxiety, confusion, disorientation, then read page 130 of Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's, because you'll see that Dr. Abraham Hoffer, who is a great man, recommends 3 grams a day of niacin and things of that nature. So, there's so much to be learned. It's an entire universe. It's an encyclopedia that you need to read in order to get to the bottom of this. I just hope that the national awareness of heart disease again today will lead people to think very seriously about what they can do to take control of their own health before they need the wonderful skills of a surgeon or of a cardiologist. But a good cardiologist today will tell you what homocysteine is, and they'll test for it. And they'll also tell you to take exactly what I told you. So be sure to include that in your next blood chemistry work. And if your doctor says to you, Bashar, there's nothing to that homo, what is it called? Don't ever go back to him again. I'm telling you, he's a quack. Sacramento, Chris, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, this is a fantastic topic, and I got to tell you something about my family. I come from a Sicilian family. And when I was a kid, I was born in 1953. All right, I will remember very, very specifically my grandmother from the old country. I never remember them, my aunts and my grandma and my aunt, ever cooking with processed foods. They always cooked from stuff that they bought that was either they grew things in the garden or they cooked with things that were raw, the raw materials
yes.
they bought from the grocery
yes.
store.
Yes, so A, there were no pesticides, and B, most of the nutrients were still in the vegetables.
They all my Sicilian relatives lived in their well into their 80s. My grandma died at 96.
God bless them. Well, that's all changed, though, in the new country, hasn't it?
Oh, I think it's changed a lot, and because, my wife and I talk about it all the time, about how we try to be careful shoppers, but you can't go into a grocery store and buy something that isn't loaded with food preservatives and salts and everything else.
No, Chris, it's gotten so bad with the importation of foodstuffs, even basics from China, that we're way past the denatured problem. We now have outright toxic elements introduced into even wheat because of the lack of pure food and drug laws in China and the greed of our food importers. And the looking the other way by our governmental agencies who were supposed to have protected us. They won't even intervene anymore in protecting us. The answer is, of course, to go down back to the level of local produce if you can get it. Many people are doing that and being a little more careful in what you're ingesting. But remember this, Chris, even a traditional Sicilian diet, let's put aside all the other concerns. I can wager a bet that Sicilian people today do not eat the way their grandfathers ate. You know that's a fact. They ate predominantly a high-grain, high-vegetable diet with small amounts of animal protein. The reverse is true today. Today we're eating high amounts of animal protein, both fat and protein, high amounts of it with small amounts of vegetables and small amounts of grain.
I totally agree with you. We always had, when I was a kid, we always had lots of vegetables at the table, lots of pastas, and not all that much meat.
Not all that much meat, because meat was, you go back to the old country, wherever it was, what was meat? Meat was the animal that produced the milk from which there was made cheese. They didn't want to slaughter it for meat because they would lose the milk and the cheese. So they didn't always kill the family cow for every meal. They ate it very, very seldom. And as a result, they had very low fat diets, or predominantly low animal fat diets in that regard. And they weren't saturating their bodies with toxic compounds that overwhelmed their systems.
You know, I just decided today after listening.
But Chris, you know what? What else your ancestors did that you don't do because they had a different lifestyle? They probably drank a lot of wine all day.
Oh, they do. But I don't drink it all day. But I do take that lesson from my dad, and I like my red wine.
Well, that's very good. But remember that. There's no remember to that at all. But in the old country, when people led less mechanical lives. They were rural people probably, and they had a cycle of life that was built around the church, no doubt. And they worked probably however they worked. They had a lot of time to have a drink probably in the morning before they went to work, and then a couple of glasses of wine at lunch, and then a bottle at night. I can guarantee you they drank heavily.
I know they did. When I was 19, I worked for a winery for a couple of years in Fremont, and I remember the old Italians that worked up there on the hill in the crushing and pressing assembly. They used to drink wine every day at lunch.
I remember you talk about that. I was in Spain when I was very young, very young. I was a teenager, a late teenager. And I remember living in an apartment house in Mallorca. It was a small four-story apartment house. And the workers, the Spanish workers, came at 5 in the morning before they were building a house, an apartment next to us. I was there for a month or two. And they'd get there 5 in the morning. It was black. They'd build a fire, a bonfire, a little fire to warm up. They all drank wine in the morning before they began. They passed around a flask. It's very unusual to see a construction worker today passing a bottle of wine. They probably would be fired immediately.
Probably.
But well, to go back to the diet before we leave the subject of heart attacks, go back to the traditional diet you're talking about. So the vegetables themselves contain high amounts, whatever the natural amounts, of B6. They also contain the nutrients I've mentioned. They were in the vegetables. And so how the vegetables were prepared was also important, Chris. And I once did a paper, a study on the difference between French cooking and Italian cooking with regard to the preparation of vegetables, because you know the French paradox of low heart disease, even though they have high fat diets, does not carry over to Italy. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
No, very people don't know that. I studied that paradox once, and I can go into it at another time. But you're blessed with very good genes. By and large, the Sicilian people are very hardy people, and you should carry that around in your mind.
Well, thank you for this topic, Dr. Savage. And I'm,
well, it's a day. Isn't it a day that's right for it because of what happened to Tim Russert?
It's perfect. It's perfect.
Okay, and good. And young men, of course, are more worried about it than older men because they have everything to live to look forward to. The older men probably have one foot in the grave. They don't even think about it anymore. It's guys when they hit 30 get very, very concerned about heart attacks. I know a lot of guys are in great shape, but every minute they're worried, you know. Stop worrying so much. You know, eat, drink, and be merry because tomorrow will definitely never come. And it doesn't mean tomorrow. It means tomorrow, tomorrow, and tomorrow. You have to just do the best you can do, and then you have to take a deep breath and take that next step forward in life also. You can't walk around with a stethoscope attached to your brain or you'll stop living altogether. 1-800-449-8255, Michael Savage. We're normally talking about politics, but today we're talking about diet and heart attacks because there's nothing more political than health. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Heart and soul. Ooh, I fell in love with you. Heart and soul. Ooh, the way a fool would do.
Well, it's an opportunity to educate yourself, you know, if you're worried about your chances of having a heart attack, as I think most people are after a certain age, then think about it. The fact of the matter is that a diet rich in certain nutrients may ward off heart disease, certainly for a longer period of time than if you didn't take the vitamins. Folic acid is one of the most important, as is pyridoxine or B6 and B12. Folic acid is one of the B vitamins. It's found in vegetables, fruits, and beans. Now, how often do you eat vegetables, fruits, and beans is the question. I don't know. Well, ask yourself that. And how much supplementation are you taking? Don't tell me you don't need any because you need some. That's all there is to it. And all of the highly educated men of science and medicine know this. The others don't or don't want you to know that there are things you can do, and that's all there is to it. So I suggest you learn and read on the subject and particularly focus on homocysteine. It'll lead you back and forth through the entire jungle of questions and answers on what you can do to reduce your risk of heart disease. That's all I want to say to you at this time. And with regard to Tim Russert's dying, we don't know why he particularly had a heart attack today, and I don't think it's important that we try to analyze that because, you're never going to get the medical records. There's nothing to be gained from it. He's one of hundreds of thousands of people who probably died today from a heart attack. And the important thing is what you can do to reduce your risk of a heart attack. That's what should be taken from this, irrespective of his politics or anything else. What you want to do is ask yourself, how can you avoid an early onset coronary incident? And if you don't know anything about homocysteine, educate yourself. H-O-M-O-C-Y-S-T-E-I-N-E. It's a revolutionary concept to some, but old news to others. It was pretty new 30 years ago, and any cardiologist who's had a decent education can tell you an awful lot about it. The important thing for you to know is that homocysteine is a normal amino acid. And as you know, amino acids are the building blocks of proteins. And the only source of this homocysteine for use in our bodies is that which is formed by the liver after the ingestion of another amino acid, methionine. Now, here comes the interesting part. Methionine is found in protein foods, and animal protein contains 2 to 3 times the amount of methionine as does plant protein. So a low animal diet is also an important way to go to reduce your generation of methionine and homocysteine. You see, this is an argument here for low intake of animal products. I didn't say none. I said a lower intake of animal products will definitely lead you to a better health style. I remember now, and this is also vague because I wrote this book on, it was back in, I don't know, the year 83, 93, or 25 years ago. It seems like yesterday. But I can recall it pretty well. I remember producing a table in Nutrition Against Aging that showed the methionine levels. That's right. It was not homocysteine, but the methionine levels of various foods. And I was shocked to see that eggs, believe it or not, had the highest level of methionine, had one of the highest levels of methionine of any food. And I said, oh, my God, maybe that explains why eggs are cardiotoxic for some people. You know, it wasn't the saturated fat necessarily in the yolk. It could have been the high load of methionine. And one of the lowest methionine-containing foods were bananas. So think of your monkey ancestor the next time you want to eat something, think of the monkey within. And then maybe you'll think about Louie and the monkey story that I told you a few times over the last few years, because I'm rewriting it and re-editing it right now for my autobiography, which should be ready in a couple of months, hopefully in time for not for Father's Day, which is Sunday, but for Christmas. But now that we're thinking about it, and we have only 2 minutes left in this hour, Sunday is Father's Day, and many of you listening to the show are still blessed to have your father on the earth. And it doesn't matter whether you get along with him or not. Do yourself a favor and make sure you get along with him on Sunday. You'll thank yourself for it when you can't call him up after he's gone. And you'll find out that you wish you had been nice to him while he was still here. And that's the message I want to give to you, because time waits for no man, as they say. And all of these petty intrigues we have within our own family are perhaps the biggest tragedy of our lives, because they're built upon sand and shadows, and they really have no meaning whatsoever. Put him aside Sunday. Call your old man. Tell him that you love him. You understand that he was a gruff old bird, and he had to do what he had to do to raise you the way he did. But you know he had your best interest at heart, and you forgive him. And I guarantee you, your life will get better if you do that. I never did it with my father because he died very young of a heart attack. I was gone thousands of miles away. I never had the chance. And if you still have the chance, do it while you can, because you're not going to get that second chance, I can guarantee you. And other than that, if your father is around, well, I don't know what schmaltzy thing you want to do with him. You know, probably eat some high fat foods at a barbecue is what you'll do. Load up his homocysteine levels with a hot dog or a hamburger. So maybe you can bring him a bottle of vitamins to go with it for Father's Day or whatever. Well, I never expected to do this today. I thought I would do a week in review. I thought we'd talk about this and that, and we did. But somehow when we got into the death of Tim Russert, after disclosing to you that he was a lifetime radical, uber-liberal, posing, as it were, as a objective journalist. And I have to say that I'm sorry, because no one else is going to tell you the truth. He worked for Tip O'Neill. He worked for Moynihan, Senator Moynihan, whose seat Hillary is now sitting in, the known liberal seat in New York. And he worked for Governor Cuomo, as you all know, a well-known liberal. So if you're a liberal, good, fine. Nothing wrong with that. A bird needs two wings to fly. The problem is America's been flying in a circle because of the left wing that's been flapping for so many years. From the right wing, this is Michael Savage saying, have a great Father's Day.
Savage.